Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
Hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. So today, I actually have a very special guest. I actually have a good friend of mine, and that is Roxy Star Games, and we're going to be reviewing School of Rock. So with further ado, let's go on ahead, throw your double horns, give her a warm welcome, and let's do this.
Hello, thank you for having me. This is going to be fun. Thank you for having me.
It's going to be... You're very welcome. It's always good to have you over here for the very first time, and I just want to say welcome to the show. And I just want to let everybody know what you do as far as your gaming channel goes and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. So, yes. On YouTube, my name is Rockstar Gaming. It's at Rockstar Games. And basically, I just do a lot of gaming. I also do some spirit box sessions and also some motivational stuff, but mostly gaming.
That's pretty cool. So my question is for you. Like, when you first seen School of Rock, where were you at when you first seen it? And where does it hold up nostalgically out of a 10? 10 out of 10.
So, because it's a classic Jack Black movie, it's automatically at a 10 for me. I was actually, the first time I watched it, I was with my cousin, my mom, and my aunt. We just kind of, I remember it. I don't know if it just came out. I want to say Showtime, possibly HBO. I'm not sure, but it was on Netflix for a period of time. We hadn't seen it yet, and we watched it together as a family. And I'm talking about old school Netflix days, whenever they had the CDs that came in the mail.
Oh yeah, we had to put it in the mail and all that stuff, and then have to mail it out, and then you get a new batch of movies. I remember those days. It's not what it is today though, with all the streaming and stuff like that. I remember I was a senior in high school when this movie came out. It was in 2003. I graduated in 04. But I remember everybody just quoting this movie, everybody talking about Jack Black, stuff like that. It didn't come up to the movie theaters or anything, my way or anything, but I am a huge classic rock fan. I love AC/DC. I love Led Zeppelin. I like anything rock. You know, I'm like Jack Black, guitar. Yeah, I'm all the way in. He's singing. He's doing this Jack Black stuff. So nostalgically, I'm going to have to put it at like an 8.8 out of 10 for me nostalgically. Now, it might change when we do it, do this review, stripping away the nostalgia a little bit as far as if this movie holds up or not. But from a nostalgic standpoint, from an 18, 19-year-old John that's seen it for the very first time, it's definitely an 8.8 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, it's up there, especially because I watched it with my family members. Nostalgia, my rating's very high.
I understand. That's actually perfect. That's actually perfect, though, because this film is actually supposed to be celebrated with family, celebrated with friends. If you're a huge music junkie who loves heavy metal music or rock music, this is going to be one of those movies that you would actually celebrate with other music lovers as well as movie lovers. So that's a cool thing.
So I actually have a lot of music interest as well. So I feel you there a lot. Like, the music quality about this movie is excellent. If you love music at all, It's like hands down nostalgia, classic, and Jack Black. I mean, what else can you ask
Right,
for?
you can't go wrong with that. It's a perfect blend of everything. So
For
with
sure.
that, being said, let's go on ahead. Let's get on with the review. So welcome to Rockin' Movie Lovers Unite podcast. This is louder than a fifth grader's band practice. And I'm your host, John, and today we're trekking the only school where a failing grade means you didn't rock hard enough. School of Rock. That's right, folks. We're diving into the 2003 film starring Jack Black, a man who proves that sometimes those who can't do teach rock and roll. And what a lesson it is, from turning classical music students into rock gods to showing us that sticking it to the man can be a career choice. This movie has it all. We're riffing on the plot, the characters, this epic soundtrack, plus we've got some backstage stories and our favorite "Did They Really Just Do That" moments. So grab your guitars, crank up the volume, and get ready to laugh, because we're about to rock your socks off. This is the Rockin' Reviews Movie Lovers Unite podcast. Let's get this show on the road. So, scene one: Dewey Finn. Jack Black is a hard rock singer, and guitar is unanimously voted out of his band, No Vacancy, by the rest of his members by his egrets and frequent hyperactive stage antics. His obsessive roommate and lifelong friend, Ned Shively, played by Mike White, a substitute teacher, threatens Dewey with eviction under heavy pressure from his girlfriend, Patty DeMarco, who's played by Sarah Silverman, unless Dewey gets a real job and pays his bills. What I want to say is this: I think that the opening scene was actually pretty cool, especially the credits. I like how the credits actually have Jack Black on a poster. You also have the Paramount Pictures on a guy's jacket. You actually have a feel of like indie rock and roll at its best, at its peak at that time, of trying to put yourself out there. And then, of course, you have Jack Black on the stage. He's doing his guitar riffs, just showing out, just being loud, obnoxious, and the band members are just not liking it at all. Do a stage dive. He doesn't get caught. They don't catch him or anything. The crowd is definitely not feeling it.
Yeah,
So,
I remember.
did you like it? Does it still make you laugh like you did back when you were in your teens?
100%. Like I actually forgot about the part where he fell, where he tried to like do the crowd dive, and I just could like I completely forgot about that part, and I cannot believe that he tried to do that. For one, but you know what they say, happy wife, happy life. I completely agree with his girlfriend for telling Jack Black, to get a real job, basically.
Right.
I'm glad he doesn't give up on his dreams, though, for sure.
That's one thing I like about it, is the whole entire thing of him having art and not giving up on his dreams, while Ned has given up on everything fully and became a full-blown adult with a job, a
Yeah.
career, with other stuff that's going on, like regular adult life, versus his friend who's actually still trying to live the rock and roll dream of having that dream and having that driven
And I
dream.
love that. I do want to take a second to appreciate his friend, because not a lot of friends will do that for their friend, you know, like help them and let them live there just to like get their dream. So right there, it shows his quality of friendship, and like it makes you realize, so you want to be mad at the girlfriend, but at the same time you're like, I get it. And I think it's exactly the push that he needed too.
Definitely needed the push. And you know what, though? I remember as a teenage kid, right, watching this for the first time, I'm like, yeah, screw the girlfriend. She doesn't know what she's talking about. Rock and roll. Screw all
Stick it
that.
to the man, yeah.
Right. He knows what he's talking about. This is the life that I wanted to live. Then all of a sudden, you get us out, and it's like, wait, I'm actually more on the girlfriend's side now. It is a different perspective on how you think, as opposed to a teenage me who would actually be rooting for him. And I'm still rooting for him. It's just that it's through the adult lenses of the fact that you don't have a job. You're not holding it down.
100%.
And then I like
That
how they
that's
thought.
exactly how I feel about it, because
Right.
like you said, well, whenever I watched it, I was younger. Like I have a dream to be a YouTuber, right? And to be a singer. And like I was that kid, so I get it. I get it completely. But now at 30, going on 31, actually like next week, it's simply terrifying to just think of it that way nowadays. Like, you have to get up, you have to be a functioning member of society, you have to bring income in, you know? So like, it's, I want to say he's about that age there in the movie. Like, it's at his point in time where he's like, okay, I can't keep being a rock person. I have to do something with my life. And I think that's what his friend and his girlfriend are trying to get him to understand.
Right, exactly. And also too, Ned is basically like, look, man, you've been, and I like how basically Dewey goes, looks at him and goes, look, man, I've been mooching off of you for years and you're all saying nothing to me. And he basically just tells him, look, I know I've been using you, and he's bluntly honest with him, but Ned doesn't care. He's his friend. He's been his friend for years. And he goes, look, man, if you don't start tying up or whatever, you're gonna have to move out. And look, if you don't do it, my girlfriend's gonna leave me. I don't want her. I don't want that to happen. I really love my life right now. Please don't let me do something I don't want to do. And then I also like how the girlfriend just busting Dewey's balls is basically he's just she's like, look, you're gonna have to pay your half the rent now. Just look, when my band picks up, I'll throw you a bone whenever I
Yeah.
get paid.
Yes, that is a great part of the movie. Look out for that.
Right. And it reminds me of that AC/DC song, Give the Dog a Bone from Back in Black. So that was a nice little callback of putting a lyric into the script, which I thought was actually pretty cool.
And also, it's completely necessary right there to show his attitude because it really shows you where his mind is. Like, he didn't take it, he's not taking it serious yet. He's like, oh, you know, same old routine. He's mad, she's mad, whatever. But like the whole throw you a bone thing, it just really shows Jack Black's whole mental state right there. And like, it really paints a picture throughout the movie on how he grows to get out of that. And that's what I just love this movie for, especially at this like this time, like whenever you're in your 30s, it's like it all that like that mental veil is kind of like lifted to reality.
Right, it's like, oh shit, I entered adulthood now. I'm no
Yeah,
longer
like
a
crap,
college
I'm an
student.
adult.
Right, exactly. I'm no longer a college student. I no longer live with my parents or anything. I'm a full-blown adult now that has priorities first before doing anything else.
Yeah, you
So it's
can't
kind
just
of like,
throw a bone anymore.
exactly. Let's see. Zach Zone says yes. Okay. Spike. Okay. So the other thing though too is when you see the band members, he goes over to. It kind of reminds me of the movie Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg, where basically you see somebody else standing in and for him to be in the front man. He goes, oh, well, who's this guy? What's this guy doing here? And he goes, man, I really love the song. He goes, Dewey, yeah, you're out. You're fired. He goes, and then he's just talking over them, ignoring them. He goes, look, it's perfectly fine. Look, what we're going to do is all your stuff sucks. All my stuff rocks. So your
Yeah.
lyrics suck. So we're going to change all that. And we're still going to be good. And they're like, no, you're fired. You're gone. And so now he doesn't even have a gig or anything like that anymore. He can't even get anybody off the streets that even wants to audition for him. He thinks that they're just laughing stock at this point because we see that one part where he's stapling his advertisements, his flyer up on the pole, and everybody's just breezing past it and just laughing at
Is not taking him serious.
it. No. That's basically it's like an Uncle Sam type of thing. It's like, I want you to be in my band. So it doesn't have like a serious approach to even how he's trying to lay out his own brand now that he's gone.
Yeah,
That
it's just
said,
him, but they don't get him because they're just people.
right. And this is supposed to be in the mind of like a podcast or a YouTuber and stuff like that too. Is like, how do I make somebody make me feel the way I do about movies or whatever your passion is and take me seriously as somebody? So it has, I like,
Exactly.
so it's relatable even in today's time too about believing in your dreams, but also how do I get people to actually believe in what I do?
Yeah, exactly.
So
And that's the thing too, he has a tremendous amount of talent. He's just gotta, you know, he hasn't found himself yet, the whole vibe.
right now he's just basically all for himself and not for anybody else but Dewey.
Which honestly, as YouTubers, we can relate to because I mean, every YouTuber, when they first start, they have to kind of look at themselves and go, okay, it's not really about me. It's about what the audience wants. How can I relate to them? How can I convince them to invest in me?
Right, exactly. And I think that's something that Dewey is trying to do though too, but he's doing it wrong because of the fact he's only caring about himself versus anybody else, because he's only in it for himself and only about the money and the gigs and trying to get his friend off his back and his girlfriend off his back. And then
Right,
he
too concerned with that part of it and not concerned with the other parts.
Exactly. And then you have the school calling him. Calling up the apartment, and he goes, okay, how much is the gig? $6.50 an hour. Hold on 1 second. Shuffles the phone around, and then he goes, hey, yeah, you have a phone call. Okay. He goes on ahead, takes the goes, doesn't it cheat me? I just thought it was funny. He goes into like an English accent that's the complete opposite of what Nim sounds like.
Like, just imagine
So.
Jack Black doing this.
Yes. But
Yes.
at this point, okay, so Dewey feels forced to give up his passions until he receives a phone call intended for Ned and Roselle Mullins, who's played by Joan Cusack, plays the principal for Horace Green, a prestigious prep school, asking Ned to fill in for a teacher who would be out for weeks, desperate for income to avoid getting evicted by Dewey impersonates Ned and takes the job as a substitute teacher for the fifth grade class. So Dewey is unaware how to carry out his role as the teacher and is instead simply gives the students constant free time. However, when he overhears his pupils playing and in music class, he realizes that some of the children in the class have musical talent. So I like how he goes into this class, and I like how Miss Nolan's is actually saying, look, the parents pay about $15,000 a year for a good education for this prep school and stuff like that. And she goes, is there anything they want me to go over? He goes, no, I got it. All I need is kids' minds for molding. And
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
and then,
I
yeah,
remember
this
that.
one. That was I really like that line and how he says it. He goes, I just need these kids' minds for movie. So
It brings you into Jack Black's mind and how he can relate to children, like, and what he can do with his imagination. Like, he's got it. It's all there. And like, she really tells you several times, this is a very fancy prep school. The like you said, they pay an outrageous amount. Don't waste their time.
And I told my wife this. I said, you realize how much money that is in today with inflation, right? Just how much? I said, about $20,000 to $30,000 now with inflation
Oh yeah,
compared to what it
expensive.
was in 03. Yes. And so then we get into this whole entire thing. I was like, look, so when's lunch? The kids already ate. And he's like, oh. So after
Marita.
well, first he goes, she closes the door. Just look, I'm starving. Does anybody have any food? One of the students goes, you're not going to get in trouble. Look, I'm hungry. I'm starving. What do you have? And she gives him a half of her sub sandwich and also some chips. And then that's whenever she a factotum over there who winds up, and she goes, what's this? What's this little black thing? Demerits. What's this? That's gold stars. And he goes,
Oh, yeah.
But I also like how he makes them go to recess. We're going to talk about that now. But he makes them go to re he goes, so what are we going to do? Go to recess. But we just did recess. Do it again.
So basically, just go outside. I'm not teaching you anything. And like, steals this little girl sandwich.
Right, exactly. And just be a slacker the whole entire day and not do anything, not care about anything. And then I like how 3 o'clock runs out and he's like, I'm done.
And you can start to see the like the confusion on the kids' faces. Like, my mom works like five jobs to make this happen. Like, and we're just gonna stay in recess and you stole my sandwich. Like,
Right. And then what's her name? Miss Factotum. That's what I always call it, Miss Factotum. I forgot what they call her.
I only know her calls girl.
Right, School of Rock. But no, I just like the fact that you have this one girl who is straight by the book and she doesn't believe in breaking the rules.
Oh yeah, Miranda Cosgrove. That's her real name.
Right.
Yeah, and she's just like straight A, like you could tell she cared about the star system. Like she was offended.
Yeah. Yeah, she played Summer. That's who it is.
Oh, Summer. Yeah, that's her name.
So she winds up telling him, she's like, what's this? Oh, that's the star system. We get gold stars when we do something that we're supposed to be doing. What's this black stuff? Oh, those black dots? Those are demerits. Demerits? What kind of system are we running? He goes on ahead, tears on everything. And then I also like how he can't spell Dewey, Shipley, spell his friend's name. So he just says, just call me Mr. X.
Yeah. But whenever he makes her go right on the thing.
Well, that's actually whenever. Well, no, this is actually where he's trying to introduce himself into the classroom for the first time, and the principal's watching him. He goes, "My name is Mr. She."
Oh, like, she's still there. Okay.
Yeah, and he erases it, and he's like, "You know what? Just call me Mr. S."
And it's like you don't even know your own name.
Exactly.
And then Summer's sitting there like she knows everything already. She's just aware of the whole thing is just a swindle.
Right. She's on to him right off the bat, to the point where it's like everybody else is so naive around it and innocent, to the point where she's like, I'm on to you. She's street smart. She her parents definitely raised her right to pick
yeah,
up.
Yeah, she's
on
just watching
things.
And rolling her eyes like
She's like, I'm not believing in this for one second. And then also, too, the way he tells the principal to cut the check, he goes, look, can we just make the check off to Dewey? But there's like an error. There's like a little bit of an error with that, though. Because remember, I told them over and over again to make it out to Cash. No, you didn't. You told them to make it out to Dewey. So.
Just right there manipulating the money.
Right, exactly. Like he's in control of the money and everything else that goes on in the school. But yeah, then after that happened.
And that right there, honestly, that shows, I didn't catch that at first. You just brought something to my attention. So that right there really shows how he's already manipulating the principal. Like,
exactly.
you don't think it's going to be able to, like, you're like, no, there's no way Jack Black's going to be able to, or Dewey is going to be able to come in here and like, just convince this principal that he's a teacher, but he really does. He's like, he's got some good skills.
He definitely does. He knows how to talk. He's a hustler. He's just if you think about it, he just knows how to hustle. Knows
yeah.
how to get the job done. And he, boy, does he does, but, you know, and then after that happens, he runs out, he's 3 o'clock, goes, okay, we made it, guys. And then the principal's like, hey, Mr. Shibley, yeah, he's what, running all the way up to the van and just basically just force the van and everything. He's out. He's not there to talk to anybody. He doesn't care about talking to the parents. He's just there to make a quick dollar and get the hell out of there. So,
yeah, that's all he's worried about at this point is just the money.
But, okay, then the next day, he tells everybody to go to recess, and then you find out, oh, these kids have musical talents. This is where he winds up finding out in the music class. He's looking at Freddie with the percussions. He's looking at the guitar for Zach. He's looking at all these other kids, and even with someone with the flute and stuff, he's like, ooh. And you could see his eyebrows twitching as the guitar frets are going.
The light bulb goes off.
Yeah. Yeah, and then all of a sudden he goes over to his van, takes out the guitar equipment and the drums and everything. He has everything set up by the time they get back.
Yeah, he already in his mind knows what, like he already has the whole dynamic of what this band is about to be, like in his mind, which kid's doing what the song is. He already knows.
Exactly. So then you have, he goes, I heard you guys in music class today. You guys were really good. Why didn't you tell me that you guys were musicians?
He does his little Jack Black dance.
Right. But you want to talk about this thing? You want to break this thing down, or you want me to do that? It's okay. You want me to?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, talking to you. Yeah. Do you want to break down this thing? Because it's the scene where he's teleporting
everybody. Basically, he has a song in his mind, and he goes over to each instrument, and he tells the kids what exactly to do to, like, paint out this picture in his brilliant Jack Black mind. And basically, he just, like, has an epiphany, and he's like, this is it. This is breaking it. And it's so funny because, like, after he has each one of the kids, like, stationed where he wants them on the instruments, he then goes, oh, you three girls, the three girls that are left, y'all are groupies. And what's funny is, like, it's Summer. Summer is the groupie. And she's just sitting there like, are you kidding? Like,
right.
This is the job you gave me?
Right. And he goes, whatever's like, well, what's a groupie? It's easy. Merch up the band. Make t-shirts. I'm like, that's the opposite of what a groupie is. They don't make t-shirt a merch for you.
And he basically tells them, oh, this is a huge honor. You can even come up with the name. And the name is super hilarious. Like, pinpoint that and keep that in your mind, because we're going to talk about something that's super funny coming up, and it relates to the band name.
Okay. But another thing that's actually funny, though, is remember when everybody's like, well, who's your favorite artist? And then just Christina Aguilera. No! And the other guy, then this part now, because of the fact that this might feel a little dated because of the stuff that's going on today with Puff Daddy.
True.
Puff Daddy, I'm like,
hey, oh, yeah. I remember that. I actually thought for a second, I was like, they're going to have to take that out one of these days.
I'm like, yeah, that part doesn't hold up like it should. But I just thought it was hilarious for its time because of the fact that everybody's so different of their musical taste. And Jack Black's
just hilarious because it was recently, it's not hilarious, but it's just, it's crazy. It really shows you, like, how things can, like, change whenever it comes to, like, stars and media. Like you're saying, this movie came out a while ago, and there's a huge nostalgia factor in it. So, you know, like, I wonder how that's going to continue to play out in other things. It's crazy.
It really is, because from a nostalgia standpoint, we didn't know anything about the stuff going down with Puff Daddy or anything like that. There was not really any social media back then in 2003.
Right.
So, therefore, nothing
was... And he was a huge deal. Like, it's not like he's just some, like, C-list person. I mean, this is like mainstream a celebrity type dude, and it's just like, wow.
Exactly. Which I thought was mind-blowing, because I forgot that line was even in the movie, because it's been so long. I'm like, ooh. I didn't realize that was
there. Yikes.
No, kid, you do not want to listen to Puff Daddy today.
No, you don't. He's not your idol. Take it back.
Right. It takes a whole new meaning to I'll be missing you. But anyways. But no, I like how it goes up to each person. Goes, okay, you know that thing you do? And then I like how you go, no. It sounds too much like George of the Jungle. He goes over to the bassist. He goes, okay. And then next thing you know it, there he's playing Spoke on the Water. He's over there. But also, like I said before, too, whenever he's actually challenging the different music, he goes, wait, you never got the lead out? You never heard of Led Zeppelin? You never heard of Jimmy Page? Jimmy Hendrix.
And another crazy thing, did you know that all of these kids, they're actually playing these instruments?
Yeah.
Like, each one of these kids, they're real musical geniuses. Like, they're playing, like, he's sitting there and he's like, yeah, like the kid that he was showing the guitar riff, like you said, he was sitting there like, dun, you know, like, but he was actually playing that. Those were actual strings that he was playing. He wasn't just making that up. And you can really clearly see each of these kids playing these instruments, and it just gives you that vibe of wow, it really makes you feel like you're a part of the school of rock.
It really does. It makes you as an audience feel like that you're watching a behind the scenes of the making of this band happening.
Yeah, like, these kids can really play.
And I remember seeing them on Jay Leno's show whenever in 03. So they were actually on Jay Leno's show playing live and everything, which was actually amazing to see them play live. And so, you know, then after that, well, now we're going to go into this other scene, okay? So basically, Dewey is unsure how to carry out his role as a teacher and instead simply gives his students constant free time. However, when he overhears his pupils playing in a musical class, he realizes that some of the children in the class has musical talents. He decides to turn his temporary job into what he tells them is a special class project, but is actually a personal one, to turn a classroom full of kids into a rock band and crew complete with a 10-year-old manager, a girl named Summer Miranda Cosgrove, which will serve as a vehicle to stardom. Ultimately, to win the upcoming Battle of the Bands, where he is out to avenge his eviction from his old band and win the $20,000 prize. So I like how basically I'm talking about this deal where basically $20,000 you get into the Battle of the Bands, just the first place winner, and then also too he's trying to keep this thing under wraps from everybody. So look, kids, we're on this top secret thing over here, where we're going to go on ahead, and what you're going to do is we're going to be on this top secret mission. You're going to be in our thing called Rock Band. So what we're going to do is we're going to compete into this thing, and it's going to go in your permanent record. You're going to just love it. It's going to be perfect. And Summer's just not having it.
Yeah, she is. She knows better.
So... but yeah, she winds up becoming the 10-year-old band manager later on in the movie, though, too. And, you know, Summer's just at first not going with it, but then he winds up bribing her with stars for the gold stars.
Yeah, she basically blackmails Jack Black in this scene. Right. And, like, no, I know how to get you on my side, because he's obviously good at talking.
Exactly. She goes, this is what she tells him. She goes, I know what groupies are. I looked it up. It's disgusting. If you don't go on ahead and make me be something else, I'm going to tell everybody. Okay.
Look. Yeah, he's like, oh my God, you're going to tell your mom. What do I do?
Right. Look, band manager. That's where you're going to be, a band manager. And I'll give you gold stars. Okay. And he knows the gold stars will shut her up, because that's all she's after is the gold stars.
Yeah, so, like, she's clearly she just wants to be teacher's pet, really.
Right, exactly. So I definitely like how they set this whole entire thing up. And then after realizing that most of the kids are interested primarily in pop and contemporary music, Dewey turns the school days into lessons of rock history and music playing, exposing the students to those artist he regards as rock legends. Six rock stars are featured with classic footage in the movie: Jimi Hendrix, Iggy Pop, Pete Townshend, and Angus Young, Keith Moon, and Kurt Cobain in bands such as The Ramones and Alice in Chains. In addition, during a montage, the drummer Prinny is seen watching footage of the famous drum battle between Buddy Rich and Ed Shignessy. And I just love the montage of this, of basically him teaching them rock and roll, rock music, what he loves, his passion, his drive to get them on set, on board to be a rock band. And I like how he said, he winds up writing down all the class projects that they're going to be doing, all the curriculum, and the times that they're going to be studying. So that was something that I really liked from this. And the montage is really good. I really love the montage of it, of showing all these rock legends that he loves and seeing them on stage. This was big. This was something.
Yeah, you can see his vibe. Like, so the bands that he lists and everything, like, you really see him connecting with these bands. Like in the beginning, the stage dive, the 20-minute solos, like, you know, it reminds you of old school rock stars, and it shows you the whole vibe that he's after, who he is, his music taste, and what he wants from these kids. So you really see each of these artists come to life throughout the movie.
Exactly. And that's something that I think the kids see now too, is like, I could be this rock star. I could be this odd thing that Dewey is talking about. And they also talk about the man as well.
Yeah, the man.
Yeah. He goes, Miss Bowles, yeah, you're the man.
And it's honestly one of my favorite part of the scenes. It's like whenever the principal busts in and he's just like...
Right, because you might as well just give up on your dreams. And then just, that's enough talk about the man. We'll continue this lecture later.
Yeah, he's basically just like, just give up.
Right. Because you're just going to be defeated. You're going to be sad. You're not going to want. Because you're going to be sad. There's nothing else. There's nothing else to do in life. That's all. You might as well just give it up. So I definitely like that aspect of how he's giving him life lessons, even though he's not really living life. He's just basically being a drunkard and being a rock star.
And even then, these kids still have something to learn from.
Right. So, let's see. Then after that happens, meanwhile, the class auditioned for the Battle of the Bands, which Dewey told them was their school project. They turned back because the show show up late after Dewey has a discussion with Tamika, who lies that she feels sick, and Freddie, who acknowledging leaves with another band to their band without permission, which causes Dewey to tell the band off is disappointed with Freddie and that he had him worried sick while in the theater despite for showing up late. After being told that Dewey is not what the crew was expecting, Dewey angrily berates the manager and tells them off that the kids have worked together to play a song for them and acts mean, but gets in trouble when the manager orders Sheila to call security. With Summer's help, Dewey persuades the battle's manager by lying with the students and temporarily ill with stigmatomaniosis, a fictional rare blood disease. And out of compassion, they let the students perform the battle dance. So there's a lot to dissect here. So,
yeah, a ton. That's like a really long scene.
Right, because we get to see, while they're over there doing that, you have the other two people that are trying to make sure that everything goes smoothly. Because this is
right.
Where they're supposed to be soundproof in the room. They're supposed to act like they're still there when they're not there. This is actually the day before live streaming. This was actually not, street live streaming wasn't even a thing. Basically, you would have to go on ahead, record your own video, pop in a DVD disc, and then just play it. And so, basically, what they do is, okay, so, Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1490, what was that? 92. Yes, that is right. 1492. He sailed around in the Nina, the Pinta, and then they're giving, and then he gives them the, he gives them the answers.
Right.
And then Derpy Entertainment says, gives the people what they want, a proper sequel. They are trying to make a sequel. It's just all about trying to find the right placement and what they want to do with it. Jack Black said he's definitely on board to do another one. It's just all about trying to figure out the right way to go about it. I say just give them a reunion tour or something like that.
Oh, that would be cool, yeah.
Right. I think that would be the proper way to do it. But, you know, I'm not a writer, but I think that would actually be something that I think that would work.
That would be cool. A School of Rock tour.
Exactly.
But you have a great idea there. Yeah.
I think it would be cool. Like, show the strengths and everything, and then show the friction of the band and then breaking up and then doing their own
Someone's
lives.
The bus driver, the band manager, the show coordinator. She just, like, does everything basically but the music.
Right. Skyline 86-28, great movie. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, how you doing? So, like I said, there's a lot
welcome,
to dissect.
Welcome.
So, this is a lot to dissect, especially with the Nina, the Pinta. I definitely like how they're trying to sneak around Miss Mullins. And then Miss Mullins is actually walking to the room as this is going on. And then she turns back around to realize, okay, they're just learning their stuff and they're going about their way. She goes about her way. Then you have Freddie, who is just drawn into this whole entire rock and roll life, and he thinks this is what it's all about. Drinking, doing drugs, doing everything else. But I like how there's a switch now in Dewey. From not
Yeah, you can see his growth here a lot.
Right. He's like, wait, I have a... Now all of a sudden he has responsibilities. The veil has been taken off a little bit. of mm-hmm. him not having responsibilities. Now he realizes, wait, I have responsibilities to these kids. They look up to me. And now you're hanging. Now he's trying to hang out with these other guys who are doing drugs, drinking like I would do, because I have no responsibility.
Yeah, it's his awakening moment. Right here, he realizes, oh my, like, it's like a Grinch moment. Like, his heart grows. Like, he's like, I now have these kids. I see that I need to do something with myself, my life. I care about my friends and my family. And you really see a lot of growth here in him.
Exactly.
He goes from this self-serving person to someone who's all about these kids. And that's really beautiful.
That's the thing I really loved about the writing in this, is like the layers that Jack Black has. Yeah, at first it might seem like one-dimensional, where it's paint-by-the-numbers kind of character, but then all of a sudden you see a change within the 30 or 40-minute marker of the movie, which is actually perfect. Hey, Rossi, how are you? It's good to have to see you popping in. But yeah, I like that whole entire aspect of him having some layers to him. And then you also have him talking to the band people. He goes, like, what the hell are you doing? He goes, these kids are going to be looking up to you. They're going to be seeing everything you're doing. They're going to think it's cool. This is not what you're supposed to be doing or anything. And not cool, man. Not cool. Goes over to
Fred. Not the same Jack Black we see from the beginning at all. No. Like, stage diving to nothing.
Exactly. And there's a whole more, much more respect for him now as a character, the way he's able to grow. And then he takes Freddy out. He goes, what the hell are you doing? He goes, what, man? I'm just doing like rock and roll people. No, those are posers. Those are one-hit wonders. Do not hang out with them. Basically, that's what he's saying. I'm not going for verbena, but that's basically what he's saying.
Yeah, so, he's redeemed. Like, you're like, wow, you start looking at him as a hero to these kids now.
Exactly. And then Skyline 8628 says, I'm glad that he became a great teacher and giving each kid the spotlight. Me too, man.
Definitely. So, we need more of that in real life, really.
Definitely, because I feel like everybody wants to be in the spotlight and not share anything. You know what I mean? Everybody's out for themselves.
Yeah, I agree. I see that a lot.
Hey, Clint, it's good to see you. Rock on. But yeah, then you have that other thing now. They're late for the Battle of the Bands. He's having, because look, man, these kids work their asses off for you. So guess what? We're going to go on ahead. We're going to play a song, and you're going to fucking love it. That's basically what he's trying to say. He goes, look, do we have to call security? Just look. Just let them play one song. Let them play one song. Then Summer is like, look, I got an idea. And then, next thing you know, we see this whole entire idea happen.
This is when you start to see Summer's role, too. Like, you start seeing that she went from this not really trusting character Jack Black to, like, you're just wasting our parents' money, to, okay, now I'm really gonna shine. I'm gonna take charge. I'm gonna be the band manager, and I got you guys' back. Let's do this. We're buddies now.
Exactly. And then they're all acting like they're sick and very sickly. And what's going on with them? They have it stick to the man. Deosis. It's a rare blood disease. It's sad.
It's my freaking genius.
And then he goes, all right, you guys are in. And then after those people leave, Jack Black comes back in and comes over to them and goes, you guys, we're in. He goes, yeah. And he goes, you're supposed to be sick, remember? You're sick. Oh, yeah.
So, oh, my God. Classic Jack Black.
Then this is actually where everything starts going downhill a little bit. Back at the Horace Green, Dewey narrowly escapes the detection with Miss Mullins, decides to attend one of the class's lessons to check in on the progress facing him to actually teach the official course material. Dewey attempts to revive an old love for rock he finds in her. Having found out that she likes Stevie Nicks playing her song Age of 17 on a jukebox, the two develop a close friendship after this. So I like how he basically, the school people, like the employees, are like, look, there was that one time where Miss Mullins actually got drunk and she did a Stevie Nicks impression. She goes, oh, really? Okay. So he uses that to his ability. He pulls it. He waits to use it, though. And Miss Mullins is also trying to make him teach math. And she's like, Look, Miss Owens, so heard you play music. Oh boy, guys, I guess she hear his spoken crack again. You know, she didn't hear anything. She goes, oh really, what's that? Oh, that's my guitar. So next thing I know, he teaches math, doing the whole entire math song. I thought the math song was actually pretty smart. I think that should have been a good tool for teaching kids, to be honest.
Yes, for sure. Like, I feel like if we could get our youth more involved like that, that they'll really, you know, fall into their work and just get a better way of understanding things. If you sit a child behind a desk for several hours a day, they disassociate. They go into their mind. And that's not a real way of learning, but if you can pique their interest and you can keep a child's brain goes like, it's like this, whereas an adult's brain is like, you know, like it's more down to earth. It's not as fast paced. It's not quick. It's not ooh squirrel. And if we could figure out how to get their attention and get them involved, I mean, I really think it could take our entire country to the next level in education. So this is a really great idea.
I think so, too. It's great for memorization. It keeps their attention. Be able to listen to music, keep up with the beat, and also be able to listen to an equation or anything that they're teaching. I agree. Pique the interest. That's what Zach Zone says. But yeah, then you have this whole entire thing play out where now Dewey winds up taking Miss Mullins out to the bar. She goes, oh, I've never been to the side of town before. And just, so how about that field trip?
Oh, yeah, the bar.
Yeah.
Oh, goes, God. Yeah, like, you guys are going to love this part.
Yeah, he goes, how about the field trip? Well, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that's involved and everything. He goes, how's your beer? Your beer is doing okay? Yeah, well, hold on. I'm going to go in and put on a song. He winds up putting on Stevie Nicks. And next thing you know, they start singing. He goes, so what about the field trip and everything? Does it look good? Goes, ooh, baby, ooh. And then they're over there just doing their thing. And she goes, I think I can work around it.
And again, yeah. you can see Jax Black weigh his ways. Like, he finds out her song. He finds out everything he needs to really get her attention and to get her to be his friend.
Right. Even though she doesn't like the way he teaches. Or anything, too, because she's like, well, from now on, just teach off the curriculum. Do not go off the curriculum. But with this situation, she's trusting him a little bit more. Now, I definitely like the fact that they didn't try to make him and the principal a love interest, because that would have actually been something that every movie did. But
yeah,
it was going in that direction up until he gets caught.
It would be kind of funny because just them as a couple, though, like let's just spin off and use our imaginations a little bit. Like, I could just see them like tangoing or something. Like,
that'd be hilarious, though, to see them two interact each other, especially in the hallways and stuff like that.
That'd be so funny. And then her, she said, like, I actually really like, I think she's underrated as an actress. Like, because honestly, in everything I've seen her in, she really, like, has such an authentic personality. And it's funny. She's funny.
She definitely is. I liked her in High Fidelity. I liked her in the movie 9 Months. I like, whenever I see Joan Cusack on screen, I just want to see what happens. Because she can be angry, but also funny, but she can also be sweet and also come off as an asshole, though, too, as well.
Right,
so,
and she also does drama. She's, like, just everywhere, all over the place. So
diverse.
Much talent. Yeah.
But then you have, later that day, Dewey's exposed when Ned receives a paycheck from Horace Green in the meal, claiming he never worked there. During the parent-teacher night later on, Dewey meets the student's parents, who initially seemed very suspicious of his ability to teach their children. Dewey succeeds in convincing them that he is a component teacher, but Ned appears and confronts Dewey, due almost entirely to his girlfriend's persuasion. His true identity is revealed that he is fired from the school after being mistaken for a pervert by the parents, considering himself a failure. he falls into a depression, only recovering when the students on their way to the contest via school bus plead with him to join them for the Battle of the Bands. So I like how in the band, he winds up bringing it down to Miss Mullins. He goes, I'm not a teacher. Manipulation in his favor. You guys, sorry about that idea. Okay. So another thing that winds up happening is the fact that, you know, that winds up happening is the fact that the teacher, he winds up finding out that Dewey is no longer teaching or anything like that either, because of the fact that he just got busted. But I want to go back for a minute, for just a second, because of the fact that him and Miss Mullins actually ride into the tourist band together. And basically what winds up happening is that he says, I'm not a teacher. He goes, yes, you are. You're a teacher. No, I'm a failure. No, you're not a failure. Just stop telling yourself that. You're not a failure. You're doing great. And so after that winds up happening, they go into the school. The parents goes, well, what are you teaching our kids? Oh, you know, math, Latin, Spanish, English, math, Latin, you know, all the stuff that you want me to teach. You know, I've been teaching it. So I liked how he's actually falling in line with this, actually believing that he's actually a teacher. So therefore, the parents are actually starting to believe him. But then after that, they're like, well, what are you doing? So after that point, they're like, well, what about this rock music? Why is everybody all of a sudden just caring about rock music now? Why is my teenager listening to Blondie? Why is this happening? He goes, look, guys, I just want to say this. I've been touched by your kids. Then they touched me. I'm like, okay, that maybe you shouldn't have said that, Dewey. That's a big mistake right there, bro. By saying that, but I understand under the context of what he was trying to tell them and trying to break it down to them. Hey, look, I love your kids. I love what they're doing. They're fantastic. Your daughter's a great singer. She can hit that A note. You also have your son, who's also a great guitar player. He can be a great guitar player. I love how he winds up telling them this. And then you have the ball bag girlfriend all of a sudden now just coming in. That's when he realizes he liked teaching and care about the students. Yes, that's exactly right, Skyline. That's when he realized he liked teaching and care about the students. Yes, that's very true. And so then what winds up happening is this. Like, well, this is not the real Dewey. I'm the real... he's a fraud. I'm actually the real Ned Shibley. And he goes, well, who are you? If that's Ned, who are you? Guys, I'm actually Dewey, and for the last couple of weeks, I've been teaching your kids music, and it's me. It's been me all along. He comes clean to the parents. The parents are pissed off at Miss Mullins. And Miss Mullins is also pissed off at him. And then they go home, and then Dewey winds up chewing out Ned's girlfriend. And goes, I did have a job up until you took it away from me. So, you know, so basically now he's blaming her because of the fact that now he's jobless and doesn't have anything. Then the night comes into the next day where now the parents are pissed off at Miss Mullins. And you mean to tell me all this time you let this guy teach our kids and you didn't even look into it or anything like that? And then next thing you know it, the kids wind up disappearing. They decide to go on ahead and go over to Dewey's house and get him back on board to be able to play for the Battle of the Bands. And I like the whole entire school bus scene where you wind up seeing them and the bus driver's like, hey, where's Dewey at? Oh, we have to go pick him up. We have to go pick up Dewey. So, you know, I definitely like how the kids came together at that moment just for that. But I do want to roll back for a minute with the whole entire scene where the parents are angry at Dewey for lying to them and Miss Mullins being mad at him, because I wanted to get Roxy's thoughts on that because of the fact that she has some technical issues for a second. So I just want to get her thoughts on it.
Basically, I think that the parents have every right to be upset. I feel like their trust was kind of broken. Like, if I paid that much money and had my kids at school, it would definitely aggravate me to know that they weren't, you know, what I was being told was not the truth. And but I think their hearts start to warm once they see, you know, their children and all their amazing talents and how far they've come. But I definitely can relate to what the parents are feeling at first.
Same here as well, because even whenever Dewey winds up trying to explain to them about all the talents that they have and stuff, you know, they're at first they were sold on it, and then all of a sudden it changes in a flick of a wrist, because now you see the cop goes, "Hey, can you come out here?" And that's when they're like, "Well, what's going on, officer?" And then that's whenever Ned winds up confronting him, "Hey, look, you know, I'm actually the Red Knight's Shibley. This is actually Dewey." And then that's whenever he winds up saying, "Look, my real name is Dewey Finn, and your kids have touched me, and I know I've touched them." I'm like, but that's who's now winding up. But that's but yeah, I just thought that was a little like, bro, no, you did not say that in front of
me. Yeah, bad wordplay.
Right.
Bad words.
But I definitely like how the kids come together to get Dewey, and the bus driver's like, "Well, where is he?" He goes, "Oh, we have to go get him at his house." And then the bus driver doesn't even question it. They just go, he just goes on again and picks him up at his house. And
yeah.
In his underwear the whole time and sleeping. And so they wind up picking him up, and then goes, "Man, this is so rockin', this is so punk rock." So he winds up getting on the bus with them, and he tries apologizing to him. Summer's like, "Look, we don't have time for this. We have a show to do." So they go on ahead, they go to the Battle of the Bands, and that's when we actually have them play School of Rock. It was written by Zach Mooningham, lead guitarist, last loses the contest to
do. Oh yeah, they changed the song. I forgot.
Yep. To No Vacancy was actually Dewey's old band that they lose to for the Battle of the Bands. But the students can accept their defeat because Dewey's School of Rock has increased their self-esteem and given them an understanding that rock transcends traditional notions of success and failure, pointing out that Sex Pistols have never won any major awards. The crowd becomes angered that by No Vacancy's victory and calls the School of Rock to come back on stage one more time. The band comes back on the stage again and plays It's a Long Way to the Top, You Want to Rock by AC/DC, with some of the lyrics altered. As credits go up, Summer is seen arguing a deal of a potential gigs and record offers over the cell phone as she enters the School of Rock, a newly established after school program where Dewey continues recruiting the band, with Ned recruiting beginners, and the credits roll as the band sings "The Movie Is Over," but we're all still on screen breaking the fourth wall. So that's
school
how
of rock, School of Rock.
And I like how the kids are surprised at that moment. It's like, what does it mean? They want us to do an encore.
They're like, we didn't win, but what? And then, like, everybody was going wild. The crowd knew who won, and everybody else did. We knew the true winners.
Right, exactly. And, of course, you know, big production companies like the ones that put on Battle of the Bands are not going to vote for that or anything like that. Because they're not really into the music itself. They all they care is about basically politics of what they do.
Yeah. You know? Which is kind of like reality, because it definitely sometimes feels like there's some gatekeepers that, you know, won't let just the raw talent win. It's not about that. It's about who you know, what's going on, like you said, the politics of it. So And then not to mention, too, the cops were there and everything else. So
yeah, I wanted to mention that, too. That's what I was just about to touch on. I'm glad that you mentioned it. But yeah, the parents are there, and then they don't care at that moment that their kids disappeared anymore. Now they see the real talents of what the kids have and what Dewey was trying to tell them about their own kids.
Right.
You know? So I definitely like how now they don't care about anything. And I'm like, well, in reality, they would actually press charges, but
probably. I mean, yeah, because I understand where the parents would come from, because in reality, you can't trust people like that these days.
No, exactly. I mean, come on, you have some guy pretending to be somebody that he's not supposed to be, that's working in a facility for kids, and you're entrusting this private school that you're paying over a couple of grand, and, you know, and she's being incompetent, and she's stressed out because she doesn't know what to do. Miss Bullens doesn't even know what to do with these parents half the time.
Either. Yeah, like, she told him, I mean, you can just tell the stress in her face. She's like, please, they pay a lot of money. This is one of the most prestigious prep schools, you know? Like,
right.
She right off the bat tells you what she's dealing with. So you honestly feel from her from the beginning, like, great, I have to deal with Jack Black. Could you imagine?
But, you know, I'm glad that, okay, there's two things I'm happy about with this movie, okay? Number one, whenever Miss Mullins goes on ahead and sees the no vacancy guitar player, and they're like, hey, so, want to go out, huh? And he's like, whoa. But here's the thing, though. I'm glad that they didn't put a love interest in this movie. And Dewey is different.
It didn't need it.
No, it didn't. It didn't need a love interest. But here's the thing. Let's think, for instance, that the whole entire thing of the open house, of meeting the parents, never happened. I think that him and the teacher, the principal, would actually get it on. I think they would be doing the do.
It's quite possible. And there's so much love throughout the movie. Like, you can really feel, you don't need a love interest romantically, because there's so much love already going on in the music and between these kids, and helping them realize their full potentials, and him growing, you know, like, it, to put a love interest in there, it would be okay, but it would be more comedy. Yeah. Right. Because, the love is already there. The whole storyline is perfect.
Now that you mention that, though, if you think about it, the love of this movie isn't about it was about the love of the music.
Yeah, exactly.
But then it became something more. It became for the love of the students and the passions of the students. So that's what it's about. So now that we stripped away the nostalgia of it, now that we talked about the scene by scene, how do you feel about this now nostalgically? Do you still hold out, not nostalgically, but now looking at it from adult lenses and some of the things that we pointed out, where do you stand on it?
I feel like it's a must-see, whether you're a child or an adult, because this is a real movie that you can touch on at any age, at any stage in life, and you can really perceive it differently, because, like you said, when we were younger, we saw it as, oh, you know, I want to be a YouTuber. I want to do this. I want to do that. And you were on the side of Jack Black, like, shut up, nagging wife. You know, like,
right,
I can
exactly.
Even stick it to the man. We'll go find an odd job. But then whenever you watch it as an adult, you're like, yeah, I'm proud of Jack Black for this. I'm proud of him for getting up and taking a stand in his life, and I'm proud of the kids for finding their intuitions. No, wrong word. Inspiration for music. And as an adult, it really just makes you feel like there is no veil anymore. You know, like,
exactly.
I can really see more on the parent side of things, and more on the teacher side of things, and where Ted and his girlfriend are coming from.
Same here. I definitely lean more now on Ned and his girlfriend than I do on Ned. Or not Ned, but Dewey. So, yeah, from adult lenses, I'm going to have to give this at least, I'm going to give this probably an 9.1 out of 10 for stripping with the nostalgia. What would you give it, though, out of 10?
So I gave it a 10 with a nostalgia rating. Stripping away the nostalgia, It's still a classic. It's still a good movie. Yeah. So I'd say like a 9. Like, yeah, or even still 10.
Right. That's perfectly fine. It's a coming-to-age
movie that I just feel like everyone should watch. Like, it's got something for everyone, literally.
Exactly. If you like comedy, if you like rock music, if you like just about anything.
Inspirational movies.
Right. It's inspirational. But a little fun fact, though. The idea of the movie came when writer Mike White moved into an apartment next to Jack Black. White would often find Jack Black running naked through the halls of, or blasting much of the music featured in the music in the movie at full volume.
Oh, yeah. And did you know that the writer was also, he played in Survivor. He knew Jack Black personally. There's actually a lot of cool little facts about the writer in this. He's a pretty cool guy too. If you haven't looked into him, look into him as well. He's a pretty normal guy. Like, really.
That's pretty neat that this guy's only normal and not like he doesn't stay in the spotlight or anything. He's pretty much to himself, which is really good.
Yeah. I mean, who do you know that writes a Jack Black movie and then goes to perform on Survivor to win $1 million? That's a pretty interesting fact.
Right, and then he goes on ahead and makes a movie. That doesn't happen every day. And that's inspirational in his own self, though, too. Because this guy is basically funding his Survivor money, in a sense, to make this movie.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Jack Black's a great guy. They're a great duo in it, and the fact that he's also the writer, it's a really great movie. I recommend 10 out of 10. You must watch.
I agree. And so if anybody's wondering where you guys can watch it at, you guys can watch it on Pluto TV for free, or you can pick it up off my DVD rack that I have, because I'm a physical media collector. So, but yeah, that's going to be it as far as the show goes. Thank you, Roxy. I do appreciate this. This was fun. I hope that you come back on here again.
Of course.
To review movies with me and stuff like that. I had a great time reviewing movies with you. I know this was your first time. You were a little nervous and stuff, but I hope that you had a good time reviewing this with me.
No, it was great. You didn't leave any like awkward silence or anything. I really came on. See, I've been in lives before and they don't feel as professional as this. So I was really nervous and I was thinking that I was going to come in and not know how to talk, or I was going to interrupt you because I was so nervous. Oh. And I really felt comfortable here. This felt like home. It felt awesome. It was easy to talk to you. It was easy to talk about the movie. It was easy to stay on task and like really follow the whole scene from scene. And I'll definitely be back. I enjoyed this as well, and I hope you guys liked me.
Rock on. I'm only gonna be on two different podcasts. I'm gonna be on a Florida podcast reviewing Edward Scissorhands. I'm gonna be on the Beep Show. If you don't know who the Beep is, I'm gonna tell you who the Beep is. It's called Finding Your Way. And that's actually the name of another podcast that he's on. And I'm actually part of Unfiltered Studios. Unfiltered Studios is a little network for podcasts. So we have the Sleepy G Show over there. We also have Finding Your Way. We also have Nail It with St. Joe. We also have the Hypno Wellness. We also have Pillars of Support. We have all those in one single thing for Unfiltered Studios. So go on ahead and check those out, where you guys get your podcasts from. And thank you again, Roxy, as well. Please stick around inside the green room as we close out. So, always a 10 next time, guys. I hope everybody has a great night. And thank you, everyone, for the commenting in the comment section. I do appreciate that. And we are going to be out and now.